السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين
گزشتہ خطبے میں حضرت خلیفۃ المسیح ثانی کے خطبات سے استفادہ کرتے ہوئے
In the last Friday sermon, availing from the Friday sermon of Hazrat Musleh Maud, I explained two of the hindrances in the path of practical reformation. The remaining significant factors in this respect I will expound on today. The third factor, which proves to be an obstacle in practical reformation, is that man only considers immediate or short-term factors and issues, whereas issues of doctrine are actually far-reaching or far-off or long-term issues. They are issues which more or less relate to the life in the hereafter. These are called ajil. As I explained, practical reformation relates to issues in the immediate or the present, or a person considers that these are factors which have no link with the doctrine. He assumes that if I commit any wrong, then it will have no effect upon his belief in the oneness of Allah the Almighty. For example, there is a goldsmith who believes that if he mixes any impurity in the gold, it will inflict no harm upon his doctrine or concept in the belief in the oneness of Allah the Almighty, considering that conversely, it would increase his income, that he would instantly or rapidly attain more or greater earnings. So therefore, he took into account his immediate gains and adopted a path which is not only tantamount to moral degradation, but is in fact theft and deception. And this is why he committed this act. He assumed that this would have no damage or harm upon his doctrine, assuming that it has no link with it. We find many a people who have performed the Hajj, who also commit fraud in business and trade, yet they remain proud upon the fact that they have performed the pilgrimage. When committing fraud or being deceitful, they forget or they do not consider the significance or importance of the fact that there is also a life after death. That the actions that they perform in this life also have an effect and impact upon the life in the world to come. In similar vein, in terms of the issue of how practically acting upon the teachings of the Prophet being beneficial or who will obtain salvation, these are issues which normally a person considers as issues which are far off or in the long term. The main factors which weigh upon a person's mind is his immediate gain or instant satisfaction. This is why a goldsmith would add impurities to the gold. This is why he would reduce the weight of his silver. This is why a shopkeeper would add things to his commodities. Why a manufacturer would present a sample of a product, obtain the order for it, yet when he delivers it, it is of a lesser standard. This is particularly normal in third world countries. So thus, worldly requirements prove to be an obstacle in practical reformation. Fraud, falsehood, and deception bring about immediate gains and remove from a person's mind long-term benefits. Hazrat Musleh Maud has cited various examples in this respect. For example, backbiting is a major sin. A line manager considerably troubles his subordinate, acting towards him in an unjust manner. However, the subordinate cannot do anything against the line manager. By coincidence, the subordinate meets the senior manager, who is the manager of even the line manager. The senior manager starts to speak against the line manager. The subordinate, who was being troubled by the line manager, becomes joyous that he has attained the opportunity that he was lying in wait for. The subordinate then starts to speak against the line manager who was being unjust towards him, depicting his weaknesses and shortcomings in such a manner that the senior manager becomes even more enraged against the line manager. And the subordinate says whatever he can, whether true or false, in order to derive his revenge. At that moment in time, he thinks that if I do not backbite at this present moment, then the threat against my wealth and against my person will not be removed. And thus, without hesitation, he commits backbiting, availing of this life or world. So therefore, to attain worldly gains, man transgresses and commits wrongdoing. The fourth cause of practical weakness is that actions are linked to habits, and as a result of habits, weaknesses develop. This is particularly true at a time when the government is not in accordance with the religion. That is to say, as a result of the laws of the government, certain practical reformation does come about. Unfortunately, however, those aspects which Islam deems as very low moral standards, and Islam directs towards reforming practically, in Islamic countries, we find that as a result of a complete lack of justice, as a result of double standards, despite the fact of there being an Islamic government, in even Islamic countries, the practical state of the people is of grave concern. In non-Muslim countries, we find certain aspects which are requiring reform, but they are not considered by them to be bad acts or decadent morals. And this is the cause for why certain things cannot be practically reformed. So therefore, for practical reformation, the government has a role. Where the definition of practical reformation by the government and religion is one and the same, and the practical reformation is in accordance with that, there the bad habits can be eliminated under the law and the government. However, where the laws of the government do not support practical reformation, their habits cannot be changed. Their practical weaknesses become the cancer of the society. As in developed countries, we find in the name of freedom many practical weaknesses. Through the means of the electronic media, now these practical weaknesses are spreading everywhere in the world. Those growing up and living in such a society as a result of being part of it and witnessing and observing these things constantly and regularly then adopt some of these practical weaknesses by habit. We find that even in the youth and the children, boys and girls, these practical weaknesses have unintentionally and unconsciously taken root in them. When these habits become embedded, it becomes difficult to stop. For example, there is being intoxicated on different substances. Once this habit takes root, it becomes difficult to cease. A person may make the sacrifice that in place of believing in three gods, he can come to believe in the one God. It can never be the case that when he believes in the one God, the very day after, he starts to perceive the concept of three gods. However, in the heart of one who becomes intoxicated, it will most certainly think that he should obtain the intoxicants. Such a person may completely relinquish the doctrines that he believed in for his whole lifetime. However, his addiction on intoxicants, which may be an addiction or habit for some months, or many years, leading to becoming restless whenever his intoxicants lessen. Amongst those who smoke cigarettes are some who entered into the Jamaat. They left their families, they left their brothers and sisters, they left their mothers and fathers, they left their wives and children, and they sacrificed in this way and became Ahmadis. However, if they are counseled to leave off smoking cigarettes, they search for hundreds of excuses. Some says that his stomach becomes upset. Some say that they cannot sleep. Some say that their faculties become marred as a result of desisting from smoking. And for this, they remain restless. This not only relates to those who enter into Ahmadiyyat. There are many people, every single person in fact, may be performing virtues with great sacrifices, but cannot leave off very small habits. Hazrat Musleh Maud has written one example of one of his uncles, who he says was an atheist and was irreligious. When people used to come to the promised Messiah alayhi salam, who were in the habit of smoking the hookah or the hubble bubble. So there at the time, the hookah or the hubble bubble was unavailable. However, in the place of this uncle, they always were smoking the hookah. They were also in the habit of intaking various other intoxicants. So those who smoked the hookah would go to this uncle's place. As a result of this addiction, those who would visit the uncle's place for smoking the hookah would have to listen to very obscene and indecent and vulgar discussions. Once Hadrat Khalif Tumsi I asked this uncle that, "Have you even offered the prayer?" This was the state of his religion or faith. The uncle replied that it has been my habit from very childhood that whenever I see anyone submitting or down in prostration, I laugh, meaning to say that whenever he saw anyone from that time of childhood offering the prayer or prostrating, I would mock him. So Hazrat Musleh Maud said that people would go to this uncle, and as a result of their addiction of hookah, they were forced to listen to things against the community and Jamaat. Once one such person went to this uncle and exited whilst cursing and verbally abusing himself, upon which he was asked what happened. So this person responded, "As a result of this curse of the hookah and being addicted to it, myself has compelled me to listen to such things which I would never have tolerated in normal circumstances." So thus habits sometimes humiliate and disgrace a person to a great degree. Some people habitually lie. You can advise them, you can supervise them, but they cannot desist from lying. It is difficult to reform such people. It is not the case that they cannot be reformed. If they could not be reformed, then what is the need to counsel them? People are constantly counseled in sermons, and they are advised. Allah has commanded to go on admonishing. If one has even an iota of faith, then counsel and admonishment most certainly have a benefit. This is what Allah has commanded, that admonish the believers, because it is beneficial for them. There is an account of a person who always cursed and swore whatever he said and in every discussion, and at times he did not even realize that he was swearing or cursing. Someone complained about this to Hadhrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him. When he summoned this person and inquired from him that he had heard that he swore and cursed profusely, the person in question swore and cursed and said, "Who says that I swear?" So when a person becomes embroiled in a habit, he sometimes loses sense of the realization that he is even doing so. Thus, some are in a state where, as a result of a habit, they lose all sense of realization altogether. If, however, a person makes a concerted effort, he can once again restore the lost feeling and sense, and reformation can be implemented. Nonetheless, habits play a prominent role in preventing practical reformation. We observe nowadays that a lot of people are fond of watching indecent and obscene films on the internet and on TV. Some do this in a state where they are as if intoxicated in an addiction. They will not eat food, yet will continue to watch films and go on watching on the internet. Despite feeling sleepy, they will continuously watch these vulgar films without regard for their wives and children. Such people do exist. So habits of these type play a prominent role in proving to be hindrances in the path of practical reformation. The fifth cause that is an obstacle in the path of practical reformation is also the wife and children. At times, the distress of the wife and children places a person into practical difficulties and tribulations. Islam teaches to not usurp the wealth of any other person. Now, if a person has placed some amount with someone as a trust, yet there is no witness to that, nor any proof of this happening. So at times, the intention of the person who has been entrusted with this amount becomes corrupted as a result of requirements of his wife and children. He develops bad intentions, and he ponders that his wife had demanded a certain amount of money from him. He was unable to fulfill it at the time due to not having that amount of money. Or he thinks that his children had asked for a certain amount of money for certain reasons, which he could not give to them. So now he has the opportunity to devour this wealth and fulfill the requirements and demands of his wife and children. or he considers that due to certain illnesses of his children, he is in need of money which he does not possess. So taking benefit from the money which was entrusted to him and spending it for this purpose, he can carry out a treatment and he can later think of how or whether he should return that trust of money. Or for some other purpose which is linked to his wife and children, he usurps the wealth of some other person. So thus, this is contrary to the teachings of Islam relating to trust. When a trust is handed over, it must certainly be given back, regardless of whether there is any proof or evidence of this being handed over, or whether there is any witnesses or not. Some people, at times, for the benefit of their children, or for the purpose of making property for them, usurp the right of pre-adolescent orphans, or to some degree inflict harm and suffering upon them. This is not only applicable to monetary matters, and this is not only limited to the aforementioned examples. But rather, there are some parents who in this free and advanced society, they normally do this. However, even in poor countries, we find such things coming to the fore, where because of excessive endearment, fondness and affection towards children, the parents do not bound their children under the Islamic teachings. I have to say with regret that whatever I am saying emerges from time to time in the Ahmadi society. Someone usurps the trust of another. Someone else commits some other financial fraud against another. Someone does not do full justice to the right of an orphan. Such issues or complaints do enter into the qaza from time to time. Someone living in a wealthy country arranges for his daughter's marriage in Pakistan. He says to his son-in-law on the very first day that I have brought up my daughter with excessive endearment and fondness. She has complete freedom. Do not place any restrictions upon her. As a result of this, the daughter's thinking, akin to her father's, becomes very big-headed, and she does not consider her husband to be anything. Whereas the Islamic teaching is that a wife should fulfill the rights of her husband and should complete the responsibilities of her household. This is amongst her obligations and duties. At times we find boys marrying girls from Pakistan and then embroil them constantly in injustices and cruelties. The parents of the son say that the girl should bear and tolerate all of this, for this is in the nature of men. This excessive endearment and fondness of children, where on the one hand it destroys the practical condition of the parents, there it also destroys the home. So thus, due to the wife and children, there are countless examples which prove to be hindrances in the path of practical reformation. Some acts that one performs manifest his weaknesses. The excessive endearment and fondness and affection towards the wife and children, all their requirements and needs, become obstacles and hurdles in the way of practical reformation. Excessive love towards the wife and children prevents him performing righteous deeds. False testimony is given for the sake of the children as a result of this excessive endearment and fondness towards them. This ill is normal in third world and poor countries that officials take bribes. They do so not only for themselves, but even for their children to make properties for them. To leave behind properties for the children, they take bribes. They take bribes to have their children educated in expensive schools. So thus, sentiments and emotions, or feelings that emerge as a result of relationships, prove to be obstacles in practical reformation. This is only possible to be reformed when one takes the love of Allah the Almighty to such a station that in comparison to the excessive love of Allah the Almighty, love for the wife and children, and those feelings which conjure for them, have little significance. Man should become completely free from the effects of this. If this is not acted upon, then practical reformation becomes extremely difficult. The sixth reason, which proves to be a hindrance in practical reformation, is that man does not keep a constant vigilant eye upon his own condition and state. That is to say, one needs to constantly consider his actions. Only then can practical reformation become a reality. When performing every task, it is necessary to reflect whether the act that he is performing is virtuous or not, whether the act he is carrying out is permissible or not, whether he is implementing this statement of the promised Messiah on whom be peace or not, that he should act upon all of the 700 commandments of the Holy Quran. He should think whether he is becoming far removed from this teaching. For example, to work with honesty and integrity is an important commandment. This has also been commanded to a shopkeeper as to a laborer and a worker. And within everyone's circle, every single person has been commanded to act honestly and with integrity. Take a shopkeeper. The commandment to act with honesty and integrity comes before him on many occasions. An unwitting customer comes to him. When the shopkeeper gives him something which is of lesser standard or charges him more for it, or he gives him short measure in comparison to the amount that he has charged. As I stated before, this ill is less prevalent in these countries. However, in poor countries, this is widespread. Thus, when dealing or selling with any customer, the shopkeeper thinks that as a result of the ignorance of the customer, I should take benefit. Some think that if I give short measure to every single customer that comes, then by the evening I will save this much. Sometimes, seeing the dire need of the customer, the shopkeeper makes profit many times greater. This is anyhow contrary to the principles of trade and business. But Islam strictly forbids this. With respect to profit, I should also say that Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, when Rabwah was first populated, counseled the shopkeepers there that take less profit and you will get more customers coming to you. However, some complaints have come before me and reached me from time to time, that the shopkeepers in Rabwah have started earning so much profit that people are starting to go to Jinyot to purchase their goods. That is to say that Ahmadi money, instead of remaining with Ahmadis, is going to non-Ahmadis, and the Ahmadi shopkeepers of Rabwah are responsible for this. So in this sense, our Ahmadi shopkeepers should reflect and strive to reform. This is applicable wherever there are Ahmadi shopkeepers, not only Rabwah. Wherever there are Ahmadi shopkeepers, their standard should be of a good level. They should give in full measure, and it is necessary to inform the customer of any defects or flaws in the goods or products that the shopkeeper is selling. Profit should also be appropriate and be less. Through this, inshallah, you will get more blessings in your trade and business, not less. Similarly, Ahmadis of every field need to demonstrate their beauty and excellence. For this, you always need to remind yourself of this commandment, which I have already read out. It is only then that practical reformation will be possible. You would need to constantly repeat this, that for your practical reformation, I need to carry out such and such things. There are similarly other vices, for example, falsehood. You need to consider, whenever speaking, that you should never make a false statement. Another example of this is a lack of care by certain shopkeepers. One shopkeeper goes to offer the prayers at the time of the prayer, whilst the other shopkeeper says that he will keep the shop open so that during this time, whichever customers come should come to him. So on the one side, there is a shopkeeper who is considering virtuous actions and preparing for the prayer, whilst on the other side, there are those who are only thinking about making profit, and are unmindful of this, and are only looking at their worldly gains and how to make profit. Instead of looking at pious reformation before performing every single act, in their view, they only look at worldly gains, and this is the only thing that they think of. I will say once again regarding the Rabwah shopkeepers that once a complaint was sent, that they do not close the shops at the time of prayer. Now, however, they have sent their report. All of them have professed that, inshallah, from now on forward, they will always close their shops at prayer. May Allah enable them to act upon this. There are similarly the shopkeepers of Guardian. Nowadays, as a result of Jalsa, there are a lot of people there, a lot of hustle and bustle, and they need to be mindful of this. Customers have come from outside of Guardian, which does not mean that you should forget your responsibilities. At the time of prayer, the shops or stall should most definitely be shut. Every Ahmadi, everywhere in the world, needs to be mindful of this. In order to fulfill their responsibilities, they need to give great attention. The example of giving repeated attention and reminder towards the action is akin to the example of one who is mounted upon a horse, traveling at great speed. If he sits upon the horse carelessly, then the horse will throw him off. So thus, a believer needs to give constant and vigilant attention upon his actions, and should do so. If he is careless for even a moment, then he will fall off the perch of the standard of a believer, and he will not be able to reform his action. So thus, at all times, in every matter, only by keeping a vigilant eye upon his action and state, can every person take the right steps towards practical reformation. When a person inclines towards vices even once, then he becomes drowned in evil. As such, in order to avoid evil and vices, a person keeps a constant and vigilant eye upon his actions, and he comes into a covering. When this covering is lifted, then one weakness after the other goes on dominating and overwhelming him. I will cite an example for women relating to the state of parda and modesty. Once this is not acted upon, then the matter extends to a great degree. I have learned that in Australia, many elder women who went to visit their daughters in Australia, seeing their daughters not observing the parda, they counseled their daughters to observe it and said at least wear modest dress and use a scarf. Their daughters, some amongst them who do not perform the parda, responded that here, observing the parda is a great crime. So thus they said to their mothers to also desist from performing the parda. So thus those mothers who did perform the parda out of fear started abandoning it. Those women who had the habit of observing the parda for a lifetime. Whereas the reality is that there is no such law, nor is this a crime, nor is there any restriction, and nor does anyone pressurize them in this respect. Purely for the sake of fashion, some young girls and some women have abandoned the parda. One girl who got married and then came there to Australia said that she was forcibly made to abandon the parda, or as a result of the environment or the society, she was also inflicted by this and left the parda. So when I recently went on my tour of Australia and delivered my speech there and spoke upon parda, so she writes that I was wearing my burqa whilst you were delivering your speech, and since then I have kept this burqa and I have remained steadfast upon this. I am making efforts and I am praying that I should remain established upon this, and she requested prayers from me in this regard. So parda is being abandoned for the reason that this Quranic commandment is not repeatedly reflected upon in people's minds, nor is this mentioned in the households. So therefore, to repeatedly point out vices and also virtues is necessary for practical reformation. The seventh cause that prevents practical reformation is human relationships and attitudes which dominate a person. Fear of Allah the Almighty diminishes. At times, greed, friendly relations, familial relationships, quarrels, grudges, spite, and malice do not allow the good aspects of these actions to emerge. I, for example, cited the aspect of trust, which I once again repeat. Man does not look at trusts from a perspective that it has been commanded by Allah the Almighty. In fact, he looks at it from a perspective that at this particular moment in time, as a result of this trust, how will it affect his friends or his enemies? Similarly, he does not consider honesty or truthfulness from a perspective that it has been commanded by Allah the Almighty. In fact, he looks at it from a point of view that by uttering the truth, will it have any effect or impact upon his friends or relatives? A person bears witness or testifies against another person for the reason that the other person inflicted harm upon him at some point in time. So thus, as he now has gained the opportunity to have revenge, he testifies against him. So thus, weaknesses in actions develop for the reason that one loses all fear of Allah the Almighty. So thus, whilst having fear of Allah the Almighty, keep this commandment of Allah in view, that if you have to testify against yourself, your parents, or your loved ones, then do so. Always give precedence to honesty and truthfulness. The eighth cause which prevents practical reformation is that practical reformation is difficult until the family is reformed. For example, honesty cannot be complete or realized, or a standard cannot be maintained unless the wife and children do not cooperate fully. If the household earns however much lawful earnings, but his wife, through some means or the others, usurps or through some other means causes harm upon the neighbors or their son takes a bribe, the money of which enters into the household, then the earning of that household can never be lawful. This is particularly true in those households where everyone lives together in a joint family system. The houses are all running together. There are similarly other actions. Until the actions of everyone in the household is not in unison for the betterment, at some point or the other, they will have an impact upon each other. The wife may be pious, but the husband may not earn lawful earning. So in this case, the house will be impacted. If the father is giving heed towards the prayer, but is not reminding his children in this respect, or the father does draw the attention of the children, but the mother is not giving heed, or the mother is reminding the children, but the father does not offer the prayers, so then the children will mimic him. In the last sermon, I cited examples in this respect. In the Holy Quran, Allah the Almighty has stated, قُوْ أَنفُسَكُمْ وَأَحْلِكُمْ نَارًا. Save yourselves and your families from a fire. It is not sufficient to only save yourselves from the hellfire, but it is also your duty to save others from it. If you do not save others from the fire of hell, then one day the family will cause ruin. So therefore, for practical reformation, it is necessary for the entire family to reform. And to this end, all need to make an effort. The head of the household has a most important role in this. Often we find that negligence by the wife and children, or feeling their distress, or unbridled or excessive love and affection towards them, proves to be obstacles in the reformation of the household or the family. In addition to these 8 points, there may be other reasons preventing practical reformation. These are the main or significant factors, as I have mentioned. However, we find that if we reflect upon all of these 8 factors, they encompass everything. In summary, there are certain impediments which exist that cause man to falter on the path of Allah the Almighty. They throw him far away from the nearness of God. If we desire to reform our actions, then we need to give attention in this direction. By just saying so, we will not reform. We need to adopt those means through which reform is possible. Hazrat Muslim Maud has given an example. There was a well-known lecturer of Europe who delivered brilliant lectures. However, when delivering lectures, he would move his shoulders considerably. They would move up and down. People said to him that you deliver excellent lectures, but as a result of your shoulders shaking up and down, many people laugh. The lecturer made great efforts to remove this flaw. However, it would not subsist. Eventually, he treated this in the way that he had two swords suspended from the roof, which would reach to his shoulders. He would stand underneath them and deliver his lectures. Each time his shoulders move, the suspended swords would hit him, sometimes on the left, sometimes on the right. So after trying this method for a few days, his habit was removed. So thus, in order to adopt the habit of good practices, we need to develop such methods through which one becomes compelled to giving attention towards virtuous deeds. And for this, everyone needs to collectively make efforts. Every household needs to strive to this effect, and every member of every household needs to make efforts. This effort cannot be conducted without sacrifices. These endeavors cannot be carried out without adopting those techniques and those methods through which habits are removed, even if one has to bear difficulties. Each member of the Jamaat needs to self-reflect, needs to make sacrifices, and needs to make a strong and resolute pledge. Otherwise, we cannot be successful in our objectives. It was that great objective for which the promised Messiah, alayhi salam's advent occurred, that we should reform our doctrine and our actions to such a degree that we do not give an opportunity to anyone to criticize it. As I have said in previous sermons, that in the field of doctrine and creed, we may have attained incredible triumph, to the extent that those very doctrines which are presented by the Jamaat were strongly rejected by the detractors. But now we find certain detractors who are being inclined and convinced by those very arguments. There are some Muslims who say that Jesus, peace be upon him, did not ascend to the heaven. Whatever the reason for them to say this or to be convinced by this, but unconsciously the doctrine and creed of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat has silenced them and is inclining them in this direction. Now we find that many senior scholars regarding jihad have given the statement that whatever is happening today in the name of jihad is actually terrorism, and today jihad is not permissible. Islam does not allow this. So whatever arguments they give in this respect, but in reality it is the teachings of Ahmadiyya that is influencing them. However, when we see the actions, we find that there are shortcomings in our deeds or weaknesses. That spirit has not been cultivated in us through which we can work in order to show that model before the world. After observing which, no person can deny or reject the greatness or the superiority of our Jamaat. Even now, we are not fully acting upon that teaching, which Islam, in accordance with Reformation, has presented. That is to say, the means of Reformation that Islamic teachings have presented. Rather, we find that we are inclined to mimicking and emulating other people. I have given various examples in this respect. We become imitators and start mimicking and emulating them. In some places in the field of practice, we have to face embarrassment. So thus, we need to strive to gain success in the field of practice. We need to be successful in our deeds and not let the spiritual water with which we have sought beneficence go to waste. Rather, we should encapsulate them or store them in those rivers which irrigate the land and play a prominent role in doing so. We should not rather be like that water that goes to waste here and there. We would need to assign our boundaries and limits. We would have to set limits for ourselves. Then alone can we be successful in attaining our objective. We need to strengthen the structure of our faith and doctrine, and for this we have given sacrifices of time and life and continue to do so. However, we are not giving similar attention to the structure or wall of actions which we should be giving. Hadhrat Muslih Maud has encapsulated this in a splendid fashion in just a few words. That until now, there are only two walls of the doctrine or creed. We have not yet formed the two walls of practice and actions. This is why thieves can come and steal our wealth and property. However, when as a result of making sacrifices, we will fully form the four walls, then all the ways of the thief to enter will be shut. Thus, today we need to make a pledge that we will give sacrifice of our personal desires, the desires of our family, our wife and kids. And we will strive to make every single one of those sacrifices which will enable the walls of our practice to go from strength to strength. Neither will we suffer or face embarrassment before others, nor will any thief enter into our homes and inflict harm upon us. May Allah the Almighty enable us to accomplish this.
Alhamdulillah, nahmadu wa nasta'inu wa nastaghfiruhu wa nu'minu bihi wa natawakkalu alayhi wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa min sayyiati a'malina. من يهد الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله ونشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله عباد الله رحمكم الله إن الله يأمر بالعدل واللسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وادعوه يستجب لكم ولذكر الله أكبر.